We are joined this morning by Rabbi Steve Leader, the best-selling author of The Beauty of What Remains. It offers a new guide to readers, help putting into words what they hope their loved ones know after they have gone, creating what he calls an ethical will. I should say I was reading a little bit of a preface in that book, and you mentioned Steve Goodman in the song My Old Man, and there's reference in there about having to, I wish you had, I'd heard what he had said to me when I wasn't paying attention, that sort of thing. It also took me down the rabbit hole a little bit of a dying Cubs fan last request, so there was a little bit of a funeral theme to sort of things on that, but let's talk a little bit about that in a sense, ethical will. Let's start with that. The phrase, what does that mean? What do we know that to be?
Well, so this new book is called For You When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. And an ethical will is essentially the non-material legacy we want to leave our loved ones. And this book is one that asks us the kinds of questions that if we answer them honestly, will help us tell, will help our story unfold. Because we have it backwards. Most of us spend a lot of time and energy and money thinking about our legal will, our estate plan, who's going to get our stuff, when, and how much of it. When in fact, that has very little meaning when we're gone to the people we love. One of the saddest memories of my life is walking down into the basement of my parents' home after my dad died and seeing all of his stuff in a heap, in a pile on the floor. Nobody wanted it. Even Goodwill didn't want most of it. Our loved ones, when we're gone, don't need our stuff. They need our blessings, our guidance, our love, our truth. You know, thinking that somehow the material is going to express our love for them, I tell people it's like handing someone a picture of food. It's not going to nourish them. It's not going to sustain them or hold them. What people really want are our words, our legacy. And so this book is a way to help us write that story. And there are two things about telling our story that are really, really important. Number one, obviously, it's for our loved ones to have when we're gone. But if you go through these 12 questions and you answer them, you have now an X-ray of your life to hold up to the light. And you can ask yourself, okay, these are the things I am telling my loved ones matter. These are the ideals and the values I say I believe most deeply and passionately in. Am I actually living them? Am I living my truth? Or am I just talking about my truth? And that makes this book and this exercise more for the living than for our loved ones when we're gone, although it's clearly for both.
I can see how that can be quite transformative, but how easy or difficult is this process? I know you take us through that, but take us a little bit through the process of how we get to that point.
Well, it definitely is a process that causes us to think very deeply, but we all know the answers to these questions. We just don't take the time to think about them deeply and articulate them. So the questions in the book are questions like, what is your greatest regret? What is love? What makes you happy? Have you ever had to cut someone out of your life? What is your greatest failure? How do you want to be remembered? What's the best advice you ever received in your life? What do you want your epitaph to be? What would your blessing be to your loved ones if you could stand up at the end of your own funeral and speak to them? These are things that if we pause to think deeply about them, we know the answers because they're within us. And this is really a way to let those answers in our story unfold. And you would be amazed how asking the right questions in the right order can enable our stories to just pour out of us, because we want to tell our story. And everyone's story is amazing, and everyone's story is interesting and beautiful. Everyone.
You have it laid out, and you say it sort of works in a process. And I guess that first one I've heard or read and looked at it, it talks about regret. I guess maybe that's the hardest one to sort of chip away at. And maybe once you get to that point, the other ones flow a little easier?
Well, exactly. So to answer that question, what is your greatest regret? That requires, right at the beginning, immediately, we have to crack ourselves open. We have to be vulnerable. We have to be humble. And the interesting thing about the answers to that question is that most people regret most, not something they did, but something they didn't do. You know, I often say to people, I've given up all hope of a better past. I think that's a really helpful way to move forward. But if we can look back on our greatest regret and see that it's an opportunity we didn't grasp, it's the words we didn't say, it can change our lives for the better going forward and the lives of the people we love. And so regret is an important place to begin. Of course, we don't want to end there. But understanding our greatest regret from the past is really not about the past. It's about having a better future. And that's part of why it's the first question, is because ultimately creating this ethical will for our loved ones is also, as I said, creating it for us so that we can ask ourselves, what are we doing with the precious time we have left, this gift, which we don't like to think of as finite, but we know it is.
We're talking today with Rabbi Steve Leader. The book is called For You When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. Initially, sort of when I'm looking at this and reviewing, you always think of sort of the legacy for children and generations at that point. But there's a point even with this, if you have a spouse, you're sort of leaving that to them as well. So there's a linear change or understanding that takes place too.
Yes, it is. And you know, we all kind of live in two realms. We live sort of horizontally and vertically, both up and down. You know, if you think about the cross, which is not of my faith, but it's such a powerful symbol. If you think about the cross, what is it really representing? It's representing the coming together of the vertical and the horizontal, right? Of our vertical, communal, familial lives, our life with others, and this connection to something greater than ourselves. But there's a part of the cross also that goes down. And, you know, in the book, I quote the great writer Isaac Bashevis Singer, Nobel Prize winner, who said, every person is a cemetery. And what did he mean by that? He meant that we all carry within us the life and the legacy of our ancestors who came before us, and of the people we spent our lives with who are gone, including, sadly, at some point for most of us, a spouse. And how do we integrate all of that in a way that ennobles our own lives and really leaves something for our loved ones when we're gone that matters? You know, the stuff just doesn't matter. But our story means everything.
When you, in this book, also you give examples of other ethical wills. Can you talk a little bit about that, or even the, I guess, the length of something or the brevity of what it needs to be to make a point or impact on a person?
Right, right. Well, so these ethical wills have existed for 10 centuries. They go back to the 11th century in France and Italy, although, you know, it's a relatively new idea for most people in America. And they originally began as letters from fathers to sons, and then evolved into letters from fathers to sons and daughters, mothers to sons and daughters, you know, friends to friends, siblings to siblings. And these are letters that are sometimes just a few sentences long, and others are thousands of words. But if you ask and answer these questions, it will give you the raw material that you need. Personally, I can tell you mine is about 2,000 words, maybe 10, 11 paragraphs, not a lot. I've read ethical wills that are just, you know, three or four sentences. There's one very powerful one that I talk about in the book, which was published in a ghetto newspaper in Warsaw by a woman to her daughter. This woman clearly felt she was not going to survive the Holocaust. And the ethical will simply said, you know, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, don't lose your faith if you survive this war. Go out there and be a symbol, a vessel, a beacon of light and kindness and love for others, because that is our only hope. And that was her ethical will. And that's powerful.
Can you have humor in an ethical will? Or are we dealing with top? I mean, how do you, sometimes you'll read something and you want to be able to have somebody get a sense of who you are, and maybe that's a part of who you are. How do you incorporate that into this sort of process?
Just be real. Be real. You know, for example, one of the questions I ask in the book is, what is the best advice you ever received from someone? And some of them are hilarious. They're true and hilarious. So I think the important thing is to really be transparent. Be you. Show up and be authentic when you go through this process, because that's what people want and need. That's what they're going to be able to hold on to when we're gone, not our stuff.
How many rewrites am I going to be allowed to have on something like this?
Well, you will be surprised, okay? I promise you, Bruce, you will be surprised at just how moving your ethical will be in the very first draft. Because if you really answer these questions, it will, as I said before, pour out of you. You know the answers to these questions. You just need to be asked, and you need to sit down and really approach it from a perspective of truth and vulnerability. So I keep mine on my computer, obviously. I publish mine in the book, but every once in a while I give it a nip tuck and I add this or take that out. It can be a living document, but I think it's very important that you write it down. And frankly, I don't think a video is the same. You know, we have videos of our kids when they were little, and then we turned them into DVDs, and now they're in a dusty drawer somewhere because we don't even have a DVD player, and they take a lot of time to, you know, fast forward and rewind and go, and we never look at them. So ideally, an ethical will should be something that's a few pages, a couple of pages that you can, you know, easily, if you're the recipient, pull it out and look at it and read it. Ours, by the way, is bound with our estate plan. We gave it to our kids, but also it's bound with our estate plan so that when we die, they're going to read both. And one precedes the other. The ethical will precedes the legal will and estate plan because it's more important.
I look at Ancestry, and I've been doing some genealogy, and there's a little bit of a comparison to that in a sense, where you wonder who you are and things, questions maybe that you hadn't been answered from your parents, and now you have a grandparent that you didn't know much about, but now you're learning from their life, and you have sort of a, I don't know if your own, you imply what maybe they were like and how they impacted your life, even though you never met them.
Well, wouldn't it be good to really know? Wouldn't it be great to really know what love meant to them, what their greatest regret was, when was the time they led with their heart instead of their intellect and rational mind in their lives, and what did that change in them for life? What did they want their epitaph to be? What did they want their final blessing to be for you? Wouldn't it be great to know? You know, if I had to sum up the mission of this book in two words, I would say those two words are, don't wait. Don't wait to tell your story. Don't wait.
For you, when I am gone, 12 essential questions to tell a life story. And I like the way the book cover sort of looks like an envelope with something to,
exactly,
open and to see. Here's this for you to read after I am gone. And you'll find out, I guess.
Exactly right. Okay. Exactly right. So I hope everyone will accept this invitation to share your story.
Sounds good. Rabbi Leader, we appreciate your time this morning and get us thinking about this. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you. Thanks again. Bye.